Welcome to the podcast of First Presbyterian Church of Marietta, where we are committed to changing lives with faith, hope, and love. We're so glad you are here.
Our second reading is from the Old Testament book of Genesis, chapter 6, verses 11 through 19. Listen again for the word of the Lord. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Now I am going to destroy them along with the earth. Make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in the ark, and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it: the length of the ark, 300 cubits, its width, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above, and put the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. For my part, I'm going to bring a flood of waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh which in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. In 20 years, we will put people on Mars. This assurance was given by Elon Musk in 2007. Elon Musk is the entrepreneur behind PayPal, Tesla, and SpaceX. You might have heard of him, you might have seen him on the news or in a documentary. It's been 14 years and SpaceX has created a prototype Starship, a vehicle designed to carry 100 passengers to Mars. As of today, the Starship has had a few test runs. Both managed 6.5 minutes of perfect flight, and both ended in a blaze of glory during the landing sequence. 6.5 minutes to destroy a 16-story rocket worth over $200 million. According to SpaceX, these tests were a triumphant success. The team is convinced that given the data they now have, they'll have a Starship ready by 2026. It's a lot of work to get to Mars. It takes a lot of investment and time and energy to get to Mars. It costs a lot to go and live on a deserted, inhospitable, oxygen-depleted wasteland. And when you put it that way, you wonder, why would anyone want to get on that ship? Or if you step back a minute, you might even wonder, why would anyone want to build such a ship? Why would anyone want to build such a ship? I wonder if Noah's neighbors said that about him when they saw him building the ark. I'm sure it didn't help when Noah replied that he was building it because the world was ending and God had told him to do it. Our Old Testament lesson introduces us to Noah, and we drop into a story you may remember. God sees that the world is full of violence, and God decides to take care of that with some violence of his own. Violence is what the Hebrew says. The earth was corrupted by humans, zakat, and God says, oh yeah, I'm going to corrupt it back, zakat. And by the way, Noah, I want you to build an ark. Make it the size, half the size of a Titanic, longer than a football field, and bring inside of it your family and a sampling of all the animals on the earth. Noah, hearing a voice that maybe only he could hear, begins to build. And it's not easy for Noah. This is a massive vessel. And Noah isn't a shipbuilder. Noah is a farmer. He doesn't know what he's doing. God has to give him instructions. I assume he built this in his backyard. As long as I can remember, our family has had a big backyard. When I was growing up, we had a big backyard. And my dad always had a shop in the backyard. Now, when I was a kid, it was this wooden building behind our house, and it contained all of the woodworking equipment, tools, hardware, and a large variety of scrap pieces, because you never know when a 2x4 could come in handy. The shop wasn't pretty, but it was functional. My mom insisted on planting a row of bushes along the edge of our yard. I think she was disappointed that they didn't grow any taller. She wanted to block the view of the shop from anyone that might come down our street. After many years, my dad needed to rebuild the shop, and he didn't build a smaller one. Of course, he built this massive creation. It was twice as big as the old one. The new shop was built completely out of metal, so it reflected the sun. So when you drove down the street now, you could see it glinting in the sunlight like an airplane hangar in our backyard. And unfortunately for my mom, there just aren't any bushes tall enough to hide that. So I think about Noah's backyard, building this giant monstrosity. And I imagine the neighbors talked. I imagine that his family got some strange stares, some patronizing smiles. I wonder if people gave Noah a really wide berth once the news got out. And who can blame them? I mean, Noah's weird. He's hearing voices, he's building this crazy thing, he keeps talking about how the world's going to end. And I'm sure some of his friends tried to intervene. Come on, Noah, just keep it to yourself. Don't be weird. After all, it's one thing to worship your God. It's another thing to act on your faith. If you're older than 40, you might remember a time when Sundays were for church and Christian prayer was part of the school day. And if you're under 40, you grew up with soccer practice on Sundays and a moment of silence at school. If you're under 40, you grew up with far more access and exposure to people of different races and backgrounds and religious beliefs. There are estimates that say that Gen Z, the youngest generation now, will be over 50% non-white. The gap between baby boomers and Gen Z, just on racial issues, is a chasm. And the gap on religion is stark as well. So for some of you, Christianity feels far harder to practice today than it did in the past, because American public life is no longer synchronized around Christian life. It's hard for our families at the church to attend Wednesday night dinners, to come straight from work and school and bring their kids to programming on a night when kids still have homework. And I know that you're tired on Thursday, and I know that your kid missed the bus because they were sleeping, and I know that you just handed them money and said, please don't buy the ice cream for lunch, because you just didn't have time to do all those things because you came here. It's hard to participate on Sunday mornings, too. It was always a little bit hard to ignore the golf course on a nice day, but now it's hard to keep your attention on a TV screen when there are so many other things you could be doing. So maintaining faith isn't easy. And we might imagine we could go back to this golden era when Sundays were special. For many years, the city of Decatur, Georgia, honored the Sabbath by setting their public school week to run Tuesday through Saturday. Now, Saturday doesn't matter so much if you're a Christian, but if you're Jewish, it's the holiest day of the week. And today, a sizable Jewish population lives just outside the city limits of Decatur, and I don't think that's an accident. Now, that policy got updated in the 1930s. That was a long time ago. But consider that just last year, a bunch of swastikas were painted in a neighborhood in East Cobb near Temple Kol Emeth. And I don't think that was an accident either. So maybe it's not easy being Christian in America. It's also not easy being Jewish. It's not easy being Muslim. You know that the holiest day of the week for Muslims is Friday? In a country that runs Monday through Friday, that makes it very hard to worship if you're Muslim. The mosque near my house has a really creative solution. They call it Sunday school. Every Sunday morning, you come and you learn about the tenets of faith. And that sounds familiar to some of us, right? I once had a coworker who was Muslim. He lived in a Muslim-majority country. Their weekend was Friday and Saturday, and I guarantee you there was no such thing as Sunday school where he lived. So it's hard to be a Christian. So what if it's hard to be a Christian? No one promised it would be easy. It wasn't easy for Noah to stay faithful to God. It wasn't easy for Jesus to stay faithful. It wasn't easy for the disciples. It wasn't easy for the Apostle Paul. In Romans 7, he wrote this. He wrote, "I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do." In other words, why is it so hard to be a Christian? It is hard. It's hard to follow the still small voice that leads you to strange new lands. I think that's why Jesus said, "Pick up your cross and follow me," because faith is hard. And that's okay, because we can do hard things. Peter Berger, a theologian and sociologist, calls this act of stepping out in faith in a dramatic way. He calls it holy madness. He notices that in the Bible we encounter faithful weirdos. Noah builds an ark. Moses stands up to Pharaoh with nothing but a walking stick. King David strips off his clothes and dances around public to the utter embarrassment of his wife. Now we read that from that day onward they were infertile, and they never had any more kids. I think it was because of the dancing. The prophet Isaiah walked around naked for 3 years. Elijah puts on weird clothes, and so does John the Baptist. John the Baptist also eats bugs, and I won't tell you what Ezekiel ate, but it's really gross. Joshua tells the Israelites that the way to conquer Jericho isn't with swords or spears. Instead, they should march around the city and blow their trumpets. This is like taking your football team's offensive line and exchanging them for the marching band. All this holy madness culminates in Jesus' crucifixion. Is there anything more absurd than an immortal God being killed? Paul didn't think so. In our New Testament reading, he describes the cross as foolishness. Because how can death be a sign of life? How can anyone find hope in an instrument of torture? But we do. We mark our churches with an icon of an execution method. Imagine if we had a nice stained glass electric chair on our wall, or a guillotine. Because that's what this is. It's foolish. The cross is foolish. To be faithful is foolish. The gospel is foolish. And we cannot lean wholeheartedly into what God calls us to become unless we are willing to be foolish too. Unless we are willing to be weird. And you might be weird already. You might be weird if you've used up perfectly good vacation time to go on a mission trip. You might be weird if you dedicate Sunday mornings to singing songs at your computer screen instead of doing literally anything else. You might be weird if you pray before you eat. You might be weird if you hand over cash to the homeless person at the interstate exit ramp. You might be weird if you took in someone else's child because their home life wasn't safe or healthy. You might be weird if you sit with the outcast at lunch, just so he doesn't have to eat alone? There are lots of ways you might be weird. There are lots of ways I hope you are weird. Because being faithful means being weird. It means following Jesus instead of the crowd. It means accepting all those strange stares and patronizing smiles and that wide berth that people give you. Because it's one thing to worship God in your heart, and it's another thing to act on your faith. For $500,000, you can buy a ticket to Mars on the Elon Musk Starship. For $500,000, you can start over. You can be fruitful and multiply a whole new planet. But I wonder who would want to get on that ship. We've seen it explode twice. I'll tell you who's going to get on that ship, though. People who believe will get on that ship. People who believe in Elon Musk will get on that ship. One of his former business partners said this about him: one of Elon's greatest skills is the ability to pass off his vision as a mandate from heaven. People who believe like Elon Musk will also get on that ship. These are folks who believe that the Earth is on a course for an extinction event, and our only hope lies, for long-term survival, lies in becoming a multi-planetary species. Those people will get on that ship. People who don't just worship Elon Musk, but who are willing to act on their faith. And I'm not suggesting you do this. I think it sounds crazy. But some people will do this. Some people have already signed up to do this. There are 200,000 people that have applied for a one-way ticket to Mars. 200,000 people. And if they can act on such a weird belief, maybe I can act on my beliefs too. Maybe we can all act on our beliefs. Maybe we can stop worrying about what other people are thinking or saying or posting on social media. Maybe we can stop worrying about looking foolish and start worrying about looking faithful. Maybe we could practice a little holy madness. And if we did, we would be in good company. We would follow the footsteps of Noah and Moses, of David and Joshua, of Ezekiel, Isaiah, John the Baptist, and Jesus, and countless other women and men of faith. When we lay down our pride, we open ourselves up to the foolishness of faith. And I think that's when God gets to work, delivering us from places of violence and corruption, carrying us into new lands and new opportunities. And my prayer is that we have the courage to be faithful. We have the courage to be humble. We have the courage to be weird. Amen.
This podcast is a ministry of First Presbyterian Church of Marietta. Come join us Sundays at 189 Church Street, Marietta, Georgia, or visit us online at fpcmarietta.org.